Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Garrett Duncan, a professor of education in African and African-American studies in arts and sciences at the University of Washington in St. Louis. He has an article, How to Make Black Lives Matter, and joins us from St. Louis. Welcome to Background Briefing, Garrett Duncan.
Thank you for having me.
And why is it that that St. Louis seems to be so riven with racial tensions, protests? I mean, the protests that took place over the weekend, this weekend and last night in St. Louis were not very far from where in Ferguson, Michael Brown was shot by police back in 2014. And it does feel like we keep repeating history there, if you will, which would indicate that things aren't getting better. So let's start with that premise. Are race relations better now than they were back in 2014 after the Michael Brown shooting?
Not at all. You indicated that I teach at Washington University in St. Louis. Among black folks in the community, we are nicknamed the Plantation. That is the nickname of the university. And part of it has to do with the racial strife that is a result of the sundown towns, where the community has been legally and extra-legally divided and along racial and economic lines. And part of what is going on to sustain those lines has been violence perpetrated against black communities in our metropolitan regions.
And when you say sundown towns, the sundown is a reference to that blacks can't be seen on the streets after sundown.
You better believe it. They have to get out of town. In fact, not only get out of town, they had to leave, or we've had to leave. Let me be clear. I'm black as well. We've had to leave the town before sundown, and we've also had to leave behind us our accessories, our businesses, our homes, and all of our assets, which were taken away from us, which if you come to St. Louis, race is almost conflated with class along those lines. And we see the shootings out here as maintaining that particular order.
So let's talk about the acquittal of the white police officer who prosecutors charged with first-degree murder. He was involved, I believe he and other police officers saw what they thought was a drug deal going down in a diner. They went to move on the fellow that was shot. He backed his car out, I believe, smashed into the police cars, and then a high-speed chase followed. And the evidence is on dash cam video where during the chase, Officer Stockley, who was just acquitted, says that he was, quote, going to kill this expletive. Don't
right.
you know it? And that became an important part of the trial. And then I believe there was some kind of collision, the airbag went off, and then you see the video of the shots being fired into the car. Well, actually, the shots were fired into the car when it sped off from the diner initially. But then later, at the termination of the high-speed chase, he shot five times, and then it appears that the officer is planting a gun on him. So what happened there? Why is what people saw not what the judge saw?
Well, the judge seemed, I read the entire transcript of the judge's ruling on the verdict, and what he said, he seemed to be very empathetic with the police officers. In fact, he spoke of the stress that they felt. I don't know that Officer Stockley addressed the stress that he felt. And with respect to his foul language about killing this man, the judge said his statement can be ambiguous depending on the context, and that's quote unquote. And it just so happens the particular restaurant is one that I frequented over the 21 years that I've lived here in St. Louis. And I will tell you, as someone who would look, who might look like Anthony Smith. I would go back and forth from my car with and without a bag from the church's chicken, because we have a number of homeless people in the area, and I would often be asked if I would provide money for them to get food. And over the years, it occurred to me that me providing them change may appear that I was engaged in a transaction. And so I would actually bring them into the restaurant, but I would go back and forth between my car and the restaurant and provide them food or pay for their food. And I would also say the presence of heroin in the vehicle doesn't make the person who I consider to be murdered to be a drug dealer. We have folks all across the nation with narcotics in their vehicle, and there was no evidence presented that there was actually a transaction. It was always framed as a suspicion.
And again, I'm speaking with Garrett Duncan, a professor of education and of African and African-American studies in arts and sciences at the University of Washington in St. Louis. And he has an article, How to Make Black Lives Matter. So, but the issues often come up in these shootings that the victims are then, their records are brought forth, and quite often they're not, you know, sterling citizens. To say the least. But that's not the issue, is it? I mean, police are not supposed to be executioners, are they? Isn't that the whole point here, that we have a judicial system? And when the public feels that justice is not served, then you have these kind of outbreaks, is what you've just witnessed in St. Louis.
Absolutely. The police are here to our understanding to protect and to serve. And keep in mind that Shockley made, I think, on his part, a wise decision to have the trial put forth before a judge as opposed to a jury. Here in St. Louis, we are a very diverse community, and the way that things went about, his relationship or the police department's relationship with a judge, and I can't speak for the judge or the police department, but they're related in a way that they're part of the judicial system and the law system, and that was his best bet to get the ruling that he received.
So what is the mood then of the public there? Because in some of these demonstrations against the police, journalists were also pelted with water bottles, etc. So is there a perception amongst protesters that somehow that the journalists are in league with the police, or what's the reason for the hostility towards the press?
Well, it's not so much in league, but there is a particular narrative presented. In fact, that evening, the protests began in what we call the Central West End, which has been gentrified, and you have many folks who have lost their jobs, and we see that as being a part of a capitalist movement to further marginalize in the late 21st century or the mid-21st century more black and working class and poor communities. And many of my students at my elite university, Washington University in St. Louis, they were among the protesters. And these are students from various backgrounds, and many of my colleagues were also a part of the protest. So it's not so much as being in league with the police, but adopting a narrative that they don't reflect upon. But I see that changing in the immediate future. People in St. Louis, in the metropolitan region, we're tired of seeing people murdered. We're tired of the violence.
So, Garrett, is that to say that you and I won't be having another conversation? Because we spoke a lot at the time of the Michael Brown shooting by a white police officer, and some reforms were brought about as a result of that, particularly the report by the federal government. Now, of course, you have Jeff Sessions
right
in there in at the DOJ, who's I think got a pretty demonstrated record of not being sympathetic to civil rights, to say the least. So, do you think we'll be having another conversation at some point soon in the future about another incident, or is you know, enough already?
Ian, I wish I could say that we will not be having another conversation. But in this community, more than anything, I was in Los Angeles when the Rodney King trial verdict came out, and I always use the metaphor that we wax and wane. So there is that possibility, but I am also hopeful because my chancellor at the university took a stand, and he called and he spoke out in the same tenor that we're speaking out, that we find these things to be troubling, and we see more and more folks galvanizing. And one of the things that I'm hopeful is that the broader community is listening to Maya Angelou, which she said, while I write about the Black experience, I speak to the human condition. And folks are seeing that this is not just restricted to our Black communities, our working class communities, that any of us are at risk for these possible results.
Well, but, you know, we're in an era, you know, with all this these demonstrations, for example, at Berkeley, which are entirely organized by the right to make themselves look victims and martyrs of free speech, when they just bring these provocateurs onto to campuses, and you know, they're always attacking the Black Lives Matter, and the president himself is making comparisons between the Nazis and Black Lives Matter and the Antifa,
right,
throwing them all into one bag. So it's a very difficult time for demonstrators to sort of rise above the political spin.
Right. And, you know, my concern, going back to your previous question and responding directly to what you just brought about, is that with respect to the media, much of the focus has been on the vitriolic rhetoric, and it's much more than language. You have lives being damaged. You're having people who are killed, and lives are being swept away. And so while there's a connection between language and the actual violence, the media doesn't necessarily make that relationship. And I'm concerned that when, for example, the president is called a white supremacist, he is also that critique is equated with folks calling other people the N-word, for example. And the fact of the matter, those people who have been designated the N-word have not gone about systematically hanging unmasked or killing people of color. And so there needs to be a troubling of, I believe, of that discourse at the media level. And it's not just an intellectual pursuit, but it's actually being thoroughly engaged in seeing, you know, the descriptive as opposed to the prescriptive. And when I say that, it is what's actually happening, the lives lost, as opposed to what people are saying.
Well, Garrett Duncan, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
I appreciate you having me.
And again, I've been speaking with Garrett Duncan, a professor of education and of African and African American studies in arts and sciences at the University of Washington in St. Louis. And he has an article, How to Make Black Lives Matter. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Jose Benavides and Graham Fitzgibbon. And this program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.